It's the Trupany Show with your host, James Trupany.
Hello and welcome to the Trupany Show. My name is James Trupany. This is my show, and today we're offering a little bit of a break from, well, everything. We're not going to do the history of Japanese wrestling this week. We've kind of done a lot on that, and we wanted to take a little break from that. And we're not talking about New Japan this week because we've talked about little else for the last 2 months. So today we're going to have a roundup of everything that isn't WWE and some WWE stuff as well. So we're going to do some different things, have a chat, just a general chat about wrestling because we haven't done this in ages, kind of a State of the Union kind of thing, which I did with Ben last year. So it's about the same time. We kind of do this about the same time every year. But today I have Miss Chelsea Spolin of Shoulders Up to join me. How are you, Mom?
Doing okay. I have coffee, which is always a good thing.
Because it's early in New York, isn't it?
It is. It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
It's it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the UK, and it's nice, and you know, and we've got people on the way to King of Trios, which we'll be talking about earlier. And, you know, King of Trios is occurring in the United Kingdom this year, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Mae Young Classic, because that's been the big story of the week in the WWE. We're going to talk about Triple Mania 25, the biggest show AAA probably have ever done. We're probably going to talk about a few other things as well. Bits of stuff that's happened in GFW, bits of stuff that have happened in NOAH. There's a lot of stuff to talk about in the wrestling world, and we tend to kind of get sidetracked by a few things. So this week, it's a general roundup of everything.
Sounds good to me. So where sounds exciting.
Where should we start, Chelsea? Where would you like to go first?
Do we want to talk about Sexy Star and the controversy there?
Yeah, I think we probably should start with Triple Mania because it's been pertinent this week, and it's been a story that a lot of people followed who don't normally follow Lucha Libre, and it's kind of a good thing as far as Triple Mania and AAA is concerned. It was their AAA 25th anniversary show. Triple Mania 25th anniversary show, which was interesting for me because I watched the very first Triple Mania 25 years ago, and this was probably the first one I've watched since, to be honest, roughly at the time of the event anyway. So this one was an interesting card with lots of different things on it, but there's two main stories that came out of it. One was the main event, which was Psycho Clown versus Dr. Wagner Jr. in a mask versus mask match, which we'll talk about in a bit. But firstly was the AAA Women's Championship match, which had a lot of controversy to it. It was a four-way match featuring Apache, Ayuki Hamada, Sexy Star, and Rosemary of GFW fame. And at the end of the match, Sexy Star applied a cross armbar, which is a fairly standard pro wrestling move these days, and actually separated Rosemary's shoulder. And then when the referee dragged her off of her, went back and put it back on again and did more damage. And this has been the talk of the industry for the last week at the lack of professionalism that Sexy Star has shown. I was talking with current GFW champion Sienna about it on Twitter this week. As I pointed out to her, she's either inept or she's malicious, and those are two things you definitely don't want on your wrestling roster.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
So, Chelsea, what are your thoughts on this particular story?
Well, so first of all, I was not impressed by Sexy Star's statement, which she released yesterday. I read a translation of it because I don't speak Spanish. And she didn't even say she was sorry. She kind of denied that Rosemary was hurt, which, I mean, like, you can tell watching it, because I watched it, that Rosemary is hurt at the end of it. There's so many people that vouched for her that there's just no way she could be faking it at this point. And, you know, even if I was being very, 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 very generous and saying that Sexy Star definitely screwed up and there's no way she would maliciously hurt her opponent, the first thing you should say when you screw up like that is, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Denying that it happened really doesn't, like, no one should ever work with her again. I can't possibly see how any pro wrestler who has a choice about working with her is ever going to want to, because how are they supposed to feel safe? Like, I'm personally shocked by the fact that she thought that she could get away with doing something like that. Because I think she did it on purpose. To me, looking at that footage, it feels very clear that she did it on purpose. I'm shocked that she thought she could get away with doing something like that on such a big stage on camera. You know, like if it had happened at a house show, there would have been a lot of hearsay about like, why did you do this? How did you do this? You know, how did it happen? There would have been people who believed it and people who didn't believe it and questioned it. But there was a camera right there. There was two of them. And, you know, Rosemary, like, is clearly in pain after the armbar gets applied. And then Sexy Star wrenches the armbar two or three times after Rosemary tapped out. And the ref has to pull her off. And when Rosemary gets up, she's visibly in a lot of pain. And I don't understand why she thought she could get away with it.
Yeah, and also it's noticeable that of the people in the match she picked on, it was Rosemary, who's not known for her hard case background, whereas Aoki Yamada and Lady Shana Apache are known for their hard case background. Also, she's a visitor. She isn't a regular. She wasn't there on a regular basis. And also, she's known associate of Taya Valkyrie, who's just made her debut in GFW. And those two have been at loggerheads for quite some time. Now, all of this information, I'm not a Lucha expert by any stretch of the imagination, but the good people at Lucha Blog, VOW, are the ones who wrote about this quite extensively, if you want to go find out more information about what happened. And yeah, it just is. It goes back to what we saw with the Yoshiko Akira Sakaua incident. You know, it took Yoshiko essentially a retirement and a year and a half of going away and coming back again to get her career back anywhere near on track. And I can't. And though Sexy Star is much beloved in AAA, and she tends to get away with murder a lot of the time, like retiring surprisingly and then just surprisingly coming back, which is what she did two or three days before this actual card was announced, you know, and gets a title shot and a title win in her first match back, which shows you how much sway she has with the AAA office. It doesn't shine well on her, and it certainly doesn't shine well on the company.
It makes me really wonder, honestly, about AAA, and it makes me wonder about their locker room culture. It makes me wonder about their management. You know, it makes me wonder if the wrestlers that work for them feel safe. Certainly if the women that work for them feel safe, because I know that there are times where the locker room is a tolerable place for men, but sometimes the culture around the women's locker room can be especially toxic if that's what management encourages. I don't know. Like if I were somebody who regularly patronized Lucha promotions, which I'm admittedly not, it would make me question whether or not I would want to give them my money for anything.
Yeah, it's really hard to quantify what the backlash against Sexy Star could be in one sense, because it's still a kayfabe territory. The fans still believe they saw Sexy Star winning a world championship match, because that's what they were told to believe, and that's what they do believe. So it's hard, unless it's the hardcore fans themselves, who don't necessarily have as much sway in the promotion as, say, someone like GFW or Ring of Honor does, because their entire audience is hardcore fans. Whereas in AAA, the large part of their audience is the casual fan. You know, that's what they're really, really good at. And it was, yeah, it's just hard to watch, and it's hard to see how a modern wrestling promotion in this day and age can work like that and let somebody get away with that. And whether there'll be any backlash at all is really hard to tell. The only thing I can think it would affect is what GFW do with their cross promotions with AAA, and how Jeff Jarrett, as the executive director of GFW, goes forward with this. You know, I mean, unfortunately, Karen Jarrett read it as kind of a semi-storyline opportunity and tweeted about the fact the women in the GFW locker room want to get their hands on Sexy Star, which isn't necessarily the best way of going about it. I'd have just kept quiet.
I thought that was inappropriate, personally.
Yeah, yeah, it's just not something you want to do, really, because this isn't the time. You know, support Rosemary and leave it at that. That's all you have to do. And it's not... Executives of GFW shouldn't really be commenting on AAA business in any stretch of the imagination at any time, because that's not good business practice either. And to be fair to Vampiro, he did bring Sexy Star over to make sure she apologized to Rosemary. But then again, Vampiro shouldn't have to do that.
And also, if you're trying to talk about this like it affects the TNA kayfabe, which is kind of what she's doing, if she's talking about how the whole locker room wants to beat up Sexy Star, is the implication there that they're going to book Sexy Star on their show so that everybody can get their revenge? Because, like, I don't think most of the wrestlers who work there would be cool with that, given how many people on Twitter said so.
Yeah, it just does not. And, you know, for those people who work for GFW, they don't work for GFW all the time. They have other jobs with other promotions where they speak with these fans who are not happy all the time. So it's not as simple as, oh, we can book her and we can make some money out of it, like it used to be in the day. And there's plenty of examples of angles of this which did make money. And as Jerry Jarrett, the Memphis promoter and father of Jeff Jarrett, quite often said, genuine issue, personal issues make money. That's what they do. That's what they're there for. And they do. Mm. But this isn't that anymore. This is, we can't trust you with our wrestlers. Why should we let you book them again?
Yeah, I mean, Joey Ryan said, I think, really articulately on Twitter, that, you know, wrestlers have to put their bodies in the hands of other people and trust them. And if you violate that trust, you aren't one of them.
No. And Drew McIntyre now said exactly the same thing on Twitter as well. There was other comments, you know, that were just as supportive. Maya Yim, who's had a long series of Rosemary in GFW, which is arguably the feud of the year in GFW last year. And another one of those great unrequited love stories in pro wrestling was very vocal in her support of Rosemary, but didn't mention anything about Sexy Star. But that's just, you know, that's the sensible thing to do. That's the sensible approach. I hope you're okay, because that's the main thing at the bottom of the day. Is Rosemary okay?
Yeah. And fortunately, it sounds like Rosemary said that the severity of the injury was overreported in the press initially, and that her shoulder, I think something like 3-4 months, maybe she may be able to be back in the ring if she keeps up with physical therapy. So hopefully it's not a lasting injury for her.
No, and it means a big comeback for GFW, because she is one of the top women in the division at the moment. There aren't that many women, but she's certainly one of the most fascinating and interesting characters GFW's had in a long time.
Yeah, she's very good at her job.
In more positive news from that show, there was the main event, which was Psycho Clown versus Dr. Wagner Jr. in a mask versus mask match. Did you see this match, Chelsea?
I did not see the whole thing, but I did see some of the highlights on GIFs on Twitter, and oh my gosh, it was nuts.
It was crazy. Yeah, the match itself was really, really good. You know, it kind of suffered from the standard Lucha thing of nobody sells anything, there's just a bunch of moves. Mm. But other than that, within its style, those two wouldn't have wrestled like that if that match was on a PWG card, say, but in Mexico itself, it's fine. And within the realms of that style, it was really, really good and really compelling. And, you know, they had English commentary on this particular show. Kevin Gill and a gentleman I can't remember, who were slightly annoying, but generally were... I thought they were terrible to start with, and they were a bit cliche machine to go on with, but they hadn't been given a format, which they kept going on about and perhaps shouldn't have done. And it's like, well, maybe you should have done a bit more research, but at least one of them spoke Spanish, so you could understand what was actually going on in the ring, which was good. And generally, they were trying to build a bigger audience. They broadcast this through Twitch TV. I think they had 75,000 viewers on Twitch TV, they said at one point. So that's a big audience that you're reaching with this product that you haven't necessarily reached in a good 20 or 30 years. You know, AAA used to promote in California quite heavily and did the LA Coliseum for Triple Mania 1. That was their very first big show, the first one that I watched. And so, that was a show after that, but it was the one just after that. So, you know, they're trying to reach a new audience. They're doing very well with that. And this was the kind of match you really wanted in your main event. Two legends, two guys who... like have embodied what AAA have been about for the last 10 years. You know, AAA have always had this thing about clowns. Like there was an original clown trios team who were very, very dominant for about 2 years. And the Psycho Clowns have been dominant for the last 10 years as a trios team, as a tag team, and as singles wrestlers. And Psycho Clown himself has become one of the big draws of AAA as a Rudos. Even though he was very popular at this event, the crowd was about 50-50 split. And Dr. Wagner was still massively, massively over in this show. And they had a cracking match. It was a bit of a gore fest. If you are a bit squeamish, I would stay well away from it. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch and was very, very dramatic, as you'd imagine a mask versus mask match to be. with all the pomp and circumstance of Dr. Wagner Jr. losing his mask in the end.
Also, can we just talk about the fact that there's a wrestler whose name and character is Psycho Clown? Because I love that.
Are you scared of clowns, though?
So I don't have the fear of clowns, but I do think they're kind of creepy. Like I don't generally like them. I'm not gonna run screaming if I see one, but I kind of think they're a little gross.
Yeah, and that's kind of the fear they play on. Antonio Pena was known to have like this idea that there should be a team of clowns driving the storylines forward on the Rudolph side. And that's where the original clowns came from. There was a face clown on Technico side as well. I actually watched a match with him in the other day. I think it was actually on the FMW show that me and Si watched last week. He was on that. So they've always had this thing with clowns in AAA. And this was a good example of how that after 10 years, the Psycho Clowns, which were probably one of Penner's last creations, to be honest with you, they developed this big draw based upon Psycho Clown, who has like the most ridiculously scary mask in wrestling for a start.
Yeah.
And like has lit up shoes. He's got like, I think is it Naomi who has them in WWE? She has a similar kind of look to her in that sense.
Yes.
So yeah, it was an interesting match to say the least, and it had all the drama you'd expect from a mask versus mask match. So well done to AAA for that.
Yes.
Of other things on the card, I did like the fact they had a couple of matches to open on the pre-show, which were all about new talents, and they got a lot of, like, they'd had auditions for the show to try and find some new wrestlers for the company, and there were some very impressive wrestlers on there, I have to say, that did some interesting stuff. It was entirely aerial maneuvers. Nobody did anything on the mat. It was all try and get all your big bits in as quickly as you possibly can. And there was some interesting stuff. There was mixed gender opening tag matches, and they were trying to show off to their full ability and try and get a shot with AAA, which was kind of like someone described it as the X factor of pro wrestling, I think. Or wrestling's got talent.
Huh, that kind of makes sense, actually. I hadn't thought of it that way.
And they got La Parka, not the chair-swinging La Parka, original chair-swinging La Parka who was in WCW, the current La Parka, because AAA owned the name to that character. The original one's called La Parka. I think he works in CMLL. But, yeah, La Parka and Vampiro and Fabio Apache were all judging the wrestlers as well. So it added a nice little different touch, and it kind of gave some exposure to some young wrestlers who will undoubtedly do well on the indie scene because they were on Triple Mania. They've been given this opportunity to shine.
Good for them.
Yes. Where are we going next then? Are we going to go to Japan or are we going to go to North America?
I don't know. What are you in the mood for?
Let's talk about Japan a little bit, shall we?
Sure.
There's only a couple of things to talk about in Japan. There was the big All Japan Pro Wrestling card, which featured Suwama versus Satoshi Kojima last weekend. Satoshi Kojima won that match, which meant Suwama, the long-term ace of All Japan, who promised he would leave the promotion should he lose, because that's how high stakes it was, is leaving the promotion. We don't know any more than that. We don't know if he's going to actually leave the promotion, because that's what he threatened to do. But there was kind of a bit of a backlash against Bushiroad and New Japan Pro Wrestling for kind of going to the smaller company's show and stealing the show with some dominant performances from their wrestlers, which I'm not completely convinced is really what happened. They did want the rub from the New Japan wrestlers, and that's what New Japan wrestlers gave them, you know. But obviously, the booking agreements is going to be based on what New Japan and All Japan want. And if All Japan wanted those wrestlers, they're going to have to say go with what New Japan wanted them to do to a certain extent.
A lot of internal politics there.
Yeah, it's really, you're kind of getting into a new era as far as cross promotion concerned in Japan, because All Japan have kind of moved themselves back up into third place behind Dragon Gate. It kind of goes New Japan, Dragon Gate, All Japan. And All Japan and Noah are kind of on a level again. Noah are kind of slipped down a bit in estimation since they've stopped working with New Japan. And this gives the opportunity for All Japan to come up, but they kind of have to play the game a little bit with what New Japan are doing.
That makes sense.
Speaking of Noah, though, they have a new Global Honored Crown champion, and that is Eddie Edwards, the first Gaijin to win the GHC Heavyweight Championship from Nakajima. He won that on Saturday. Nakajima had a good run with this championship. He wrestled Brian Cage of Lucha Underground fame the week before, or sorry, 2 weeks before, and had a cracking match with him. They had a cracking match with Eddie Edwards, which I knew was going to be really, really good. And Eddie Edwards takes the title, which kind of like works on their GFW arrangements. And certainly, you know, Eddie Edwards is a Noah guy. He's been in Noah for a long time doing his Japanese tours there, rather than for any other company, back when he was a proper junior heavyweight and looked really, really skinny. There's some gifs of him floating around in the early 2000s in Noah this week on the internet. So, yeah, I think it's a good move for Noah in one sense, because it means that you've got a big American star who's taken the company forward, a former world champion, and it should create some interest for their particular fan base. But equally, there's some people who are arguing that Eddie really isn't the man when you had Nakajima, who was doing such a good job. Any thoughts on this, Chelsea?
Mostly that I like Eddie Edwards, and he seems like a lateral move if they're trying to pick a gaijin to help them expand their profile internationally. Because I've seen him wrestle in person, I think, twice, and he definitely has that, like, star power quality that you want somebody to have if they're going to have good matches on television. He has it in person and he has it on television. So I thought, I don't know, it's an interesting move, I think, for them to put the title on a foreigner, and also for that foreigner to be somebody who has so much experience being on TV.
Yes, certainly. You know, former Ring of Honor, former Impact Wrestling champion. He's definitely got something about him. And, you know, he's not, there are other people in the GFW locker room I wouldn't have been so happy about being GHC heavyweight champion who don't quite get how Japan works yet, if you see what I mean. You know, so I think he's probably the right choice to be a King's Road style champion, and he could do things with the belt that maybe some of the people on the Noah roster couldn't do. And it is all about expansion. When we talk about AAA using Twitch, I mean, the AJPW card that I was talking about earlier was also available. They're doing their Championship Carnival tournament on the Fight Network.
That's great.
You get that on the Fight app. So, you know, there is all these expanding possibilities of television that you can see. You know, Ring of Honor's on the Fight app now as well. You know, so there's loads of stuff out there that where wrestling companies are trying to expand their base worldwide. So it's, yeah, I think maybe GHC is a good kind of example, but GHC desperately need a streaming service. They haven't got one, and they're the only company in Japan that doesn't have one now. You know, there's small indie Joshi companies that only promote in Osaka that have streaming services, and Noah doesn't have one, partly because their model was brilliant for the 1990s, but isn't necessarily brilliant for today. They're still part-owned by, they were originally part-owned by Nippon TV, and I think they have a major deal with Gayora TV to produce a lot of television for them, which is great, but it means you don't have that secondary income of which is always there, of having a streaming service, which is really the model that's worked for pro wrestling in the last 5 years.
It's kind of the kiss of death. Like, it's so hard. The problem there is right now, right, is that there's so much quality wrestling that's available so easily that if your promotion is too much work to follow, people just won't.
Yeah. It is just like, I can watch local promotions in the Pacific Northwest on YouTube every week and get a perfectly good shot of family-orientated pro wrestling that tells reasonably good stories and is reasonably well-produced, and be happy. You know, if you're a casual fan that wants something different, that's you can find everything you ever wanted under the sun with a little bit of money or even just a little bit of time. So it's like the fact that Noah isn't as well prepared for international wrestling as, say, I don't know, Fight Club Pro, that kind of tells you that they need to sort something out, really.
Yep.
Okay, staying in Japan, we have one more piece of news from Japan, which is, well, it's kind of international news. The Pro Wrestling Illustrated 500 was released this week, and the number one wrestler in the world was Kazuchika Okada, the very first Japanese wrestler to be named the PWI 500 number one. And, you know, the PWI 500 is monitored not on who had the best matches, but who won the highest profile matches and the most consistently good winners, because it's a kayfabe magazine and they deal with kayfabe. And if you've only lost two matches in a year, you're going to do pretty well.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the first time that a New Japan wrestler has won this, the first time an active Japanese wrestler in Japan has won this. So it says an awful lot about where Pro Wrestling Illustrated feel the industry is going. It says an awful lot about what Pro Wrestling Illustrated feel Japanese companies are now worth to the international audience, because they wouldn't have done this 5 or 6 years ago, because, you know, back then, their definition of a world heavyweight champion was if you had a US national TV deal, that was a world heavyweight championship. So IWGP was not considered a world heavyweight championship. It was considered prestigious and they talked it up, but they never classed it as a world championship. But now, because of New Japan World, they do consider it a world championship. And it has meant that Okada, who was undefeated during the entire period of the assessment, except for two matches in the G1 last year, it means that he's had, you know, a perfect year, more or less. And you can't argue with that when it comes to kayfabe.
And, I mean, there was a lot of arguing on the internet about who belonged where in the rankings on this list. But I think it didn't really seem to me like anybody had a problem with Okada being number one, just because, like, if you were making a power ranking, even if you weren't looking at just the wins and the losses of people in pro wrestling, and you were going to say, oh, well, I think Okada's the best in the world, I think most people would just go, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Because it's hard to argue with that.
It is, really, because you've had no dominant champion in WWE. You certainly haven't had a dominant champion in Impact Wrestling, whoever's owned the company. It's floated back and forth and around and around. So, yeah.
Ring of Honor's had so much turmoil this year.
Yeah, so you've not had one dominant guy in the PWI 500. The PWI 50, which is due out later this year, that's a whole other kettle of fish. It's 10 times too small for a start. But we'll talk about that when it comes out. But generally speaking, the men's PWI 500, I think Bill Apter said it best when he started the whole process off with the PWI 500. There's two numbers anyone worries about. Who's number one and who's number 500? You know, he said everybody wants to be number one because that means you're the best wrestler in the world. Everybody wants to be number 500 because you'd be the most talked about wrestler in the world. You made the 500. Anyone outside the 500 is going to have a chip on their shoulder, because just that's just the nature of lists, and it's just the way it is, and it's slightly unfair. But they have done that. They do put an awful lot of research time into it. The people that have been on that board in the past have been people like Mike Quackenbush, you know, Strieger, our Twitter friend who writes for Cage Match. He puts input into the 500 as well. There's wrestling journalists from all over the world who do put input into it now. It's much more comprehensive than it used to be. And a lot of the time, you know, it is just like they are struggling to find 500 names, and they have the bottom end of the list is always going to be a bit fluffy, but the top end of the list is going to be representative of those television performances, really.
So that's true for the men's list. The women's list is pretty atrocious.
Yes, it is.
50.
Yeah.
Because they don't, Sarah Reed on Twitter made a really good point about this, and she writes about women's wrestling almost exclusively. They don't, if you don't have a cage match page, you can't get considered for that. If you don't have a Wikipedia page, you can't get considered for that. And the people who make those selections don't follow anything really outside of North America and outside of the barest glimpses of the Japanese women's wrestling scene. So there are incredible Japanese female wrestlers who don't get considered for that list at all. But they find ways to put basically everyone who worked for WWE in the last year on that list.
Yeah, I mean, as an example, in last year in FSM's top 50 women wrestlers, Mako Satomura was classed as the best wrestler in the world, and she probably didn't appear on the PWI 500 list.
If I'm looking at the right one, I think I'm looking at the one from this year. She didn't, and Eva Marie did, so.
And, you know, she won King of Trios last year. So she did appear in American promotions in the time.
Like, that's a pretty glaring omission.
It is, really. So, you know, the PWI 50 is nowhere near as comprehensive as the 500. And good work to PWI for the 500. It's something they don't have to do, and it's something that takes time and takes money because you have to pay these people to do it. So well done to them for doing it, but I would like that comprehension transferred to the women now as well, please. Or at least 100 accurately assessed women. would be a good
start. Yeah, they need to up their game.
Yeah, certainly, because there's so much more women wrestling journalists around, like me and you. Sticking with North America, we had the fallout of the Alberto El Patron departure from the GFW Heavyweight Championship released on TV last week. And we have a new GFW Impact Wrestling Heavyweight Champion, which is Eli Drake, which is something Ben Spindler will be dead happy about. and I'm sure we'll get tweets from him this week. Eli Drake wins the championship. For a guy who's worked hard and has been an interesting character on Impact Wrestling, I like him a lot. I know Marcus, who watches every week and writes about writes about Impact every week, he's a big fan of his as well. He's an old-fashioned throwback heel, and I think that works. And I did like the way he won the championship. It was presented really well. It was a gauntlet battle royal match, like the Royal Rumble, basically. And him and Eddie Edwards started it, and him and Eddie Edwards finished it. And he beat everybody in the company, giving him a undisputed championship run, which is really something you want with your new champion, who may not be quite as over as he was. You know, he's not been in the main event picture very long. So if you're trying to give him a big push, this is the ideal way of doing it.
Yeah.
Have you any thoughts on Eli Drake?
I saw him live one time and I didn't really know who he was, but he's very charismatic in person. I saw him and was like, I bet that guy's on television because he carries himself like a TV star. And then when I watched some footage of him from GFW, I wasn't surprised. Like, it makes sense. He knows where all the cameras are, you know. He knows how to get the audience to react to him when he comes out and makes an entrance.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, even stuff like his climb to the top rope, which he screwed up many times, but he's just kind of like recovered from it and turned it into a bit. You know, he can think on his feet. He knows what he's doing. He has got the generic 2006 WWE developmental body, but then so was EC3, and he worked fine as a heavyweight champion for GFW. So I see this as not being a problem, put it that way.
If you can have the matches that people get excited about and you can back it up, then I think it's fine.
And he's got loads of people to wrestle with and make stories with in the next 12 months. I think he's going to have a championship reign that's going to be pretty memorable as far as GFW is concerned. And yeah, we'll see where it goes from there. And he's certainly an improvement on Alberto El Patron, who, bless his cotton socks, phoned it in for a lot of what he was doing. The main event he had with Bobby Lashley at Slammiversary was all right. It was okay. But it wasn't. There was an awful lot there in his title reign that, partly in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking what the heck's going on in his relationship, and it doesn't seem very nice. And also, you know, that character just seemed flat as far as what was going on in GFW.
And, you know, I've seen the guy wrestle up close, and I was about 20 feet away from him one time where he had a match with Loki. And
funny you should mention
very
that.
Very good match.
Funny you should mention that.
Why is it funny? Because of Loki?
Loki has left the company.
Right.
Yeah, out. Yeah, he left the company 2 weeks ago.
It's kind of what he does, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So someone, you know the Grandpa Simpson revolving door at the burlesque house gif? Someone said that was Loki's career.
Yikes.
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying about Loki and Alberto El Patron.
Oh, no, that's okay. They had a really spectacular match at House of Glory that I was there for, and it really showed me how much of Alberto's talent was wasted in WWE, because I had never seen him wrestle like that before. It was a shock, actually, when I realized how good he really is. But that said, I don't like the way he treats his girlfriend, and there's nothing he will ever be able to do that can eclipse that for me.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it creeps me out too much.
I mean, there are plenty of examples of not very nice people in pro wrestling that we do admire, you know, but this one just seems to, I don't know if it's because their entire relationship is played out in public.
That probably doesn't help.
It doesn't help. You know, there are, I mean, Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano are in a relationship, but we don't know anything about it other than the fact that they're married. That's it.
They did a little documentary that's on YouTube that you can watch about the two of them. But okay, so this don't take this too seriously, like too literally. This isn't a universal rule, but I've watched a bunch of videos where they wrestle each other, and they are so in sync together. They wrestle like two bodies with one brain.
Yeah.
And they just their dynamic in the ring seems to be so even-handed that I just have the impression that I get from, like, you know, just watching them wrestle and the way they talk to each other and the way they talk to each other about wrestling. It seems to be so equitable. They seem happy and like they respect each other, and it's nice. And the way that Del Rio talks about his girlfriend on Instagram makes me feel creeped out.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously we don't know what's going on there. I don't know them personally, but those domestic abuse allegations are not great, as I've talked about on Twitter many times. So I don't wish good things for him. And mostly when I see him, I want him out of my face.
Fair enough. Well, just dipping onto Candice LeRae, interesting little snippet from an interview with Cody Rhodes this week. He was asked, have you ever felt like out of control in the ring with an opponent and you don't know what their strength is like? And he said, yes. And he said, who? And they said, well, who was it with? He said, Brock and Candice LeRae.
And actually, I don't know if you saw the GIF.
Yeah.
Somebody found it, of the ballsplex that she does to Cody.
Yeah.
And she tosses him right over her head, and it's just beautiful. And like, he's in his nice wrestling gear, and she's in like black sweats and a hoodie, you know, because I think she probably came out in civvies or something.
Yeah.
Like, she just drops him, and yeah, he said, he's like, I felt helpless in her arms. I thought, what natural strength, like what tremendous strength, like. It was just beautiful.
And that's not saying he felt unsafe. It just like he couldn't quantify how strong she was. And equally he couldn't quantify how strong Brock Lesnar was.
Yep.
So,
yep. And Candice LeRae is tougher than you. So
yes, there you go. So that's it. And I think that's pretty much covered everything except to and including, well, not including because we haven't talked about it yet, the Mae Young Classic, which debuted on the WWE Network this week. Now, I know I normally don't talk about the Mae Young Classic, WWE, but I have to make an exception for this because it's women's wrestling and it featured a lot of great, great women's wrestlers from around the world. Some even I had never heard of. So, you know, this was fantastic to see them get this opportunity. And I kind of had a vested interest with one of the competitors, as you probably know about. We'll talk to that in a bit. Chelsea, what are your overall thoughts on the Mae Young Classic?
This was so refreshing. This was a breath of fresh air. It's so, okay, it's not perfect. Right before I fangirl, I'm just going to acknowledge there is some stuff to criticize. JR and Lita did not do a very good job on commentary, and it is very frustrating to me that the Cruiserweight Classic got Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan, and this didn't. This should have gotten the royal treatment too. Mauro is doing stuff for NXT now. That is what this deserved. And I love Lita. Lita's spectacular. I love her as a brand ambassador for WWE and as an ambassador for women's wrestling. She's awesome. She is not great at commentary, as much as I love her. She has an unfortunate habit of stopping in mid-sentence, which can get very distracting. That said, I thought a lot of the things about the way they presented this was done really well. I liked that they turned the lights down in the audience during the show the way they do for NXT. I feel like it enhances the drama and the seriousness, which after Beach Ball Mania was something that we all needed, I think, where the focus was on the wrestling and not the audience. I thought that was good. It was really nice to see some of these women have matches in an environment with high production values. Like, I've watched Nicole Savoy wrestle in, this is just an example off the top of my head, you know, on YouTube, I've watched her wrestle in gymnasiums and Elks Lodges, and I was thrilled to see her get a shot in high definition in, you know, glorious, beautiful color. Like, That was so cool. Also, I think they did a good job of picking women from their developmental system, which we all knew they were going to do, who could play ball at least enough that they could keep up with some of the spectacular women in this tournament. I was so excited about most of the first episode, or not first episode, the first round. Like, oh my gosh. Favorite matches, Jazzy and Abby had an absolute barn burner. Like, I've every single person I know who has watched any of the Mae Young Classic talks about that match and raves about it. My friend Ashley watched it a couple days after a lot of us were talking about it on Twitter. It was a couple days after it came out, and she was like, oh my God, this is as good as everybody says it is. So good. Mia Yim and Sarah Logan was just spectacular. So many people were saying on Twitter, they're like, I've never seen Mia Yim before, but holy crap, how wasn't she signed like a decade ago? Like, she's so good. Kairi having her debut with Tessa was awesome. It was awesome. It was so good. And they clearly, they WWE, normally you can tell when they overproduce something, right? And yeah, you can tell when they're just like, we're going to let y'all do what you want to do. And they let Kairi and Tessa have the match that they wanted to have for the most part, because Kairi got all her spots in there, including the stuff that she does in her repertoire that's very similar to things that other people do. Sorry, Roman Reigns, but her Superman punch is way better than yours. Tessa got to do a whole bunch of her repertoire that overlaps with the rest of the roster, and Tessa got to show off, but also gave a very generous performance for Kairi's debut, and it was beautiful. There's just, honestly, there's like so many matches I could talk about that are so great. Dakota Kai was awesome. Serena Deeb got to have her big homecoming, which I was so happy for her, considering I'm getting a little emotional talking about it, like, considering that she left the company in what was, you know, a really scandalous way where they fired her because she got caught drinking alcohol in public or something. Like, it was really nice to see her come back. And I was so happy that she teased the GTS. Like, that was, she deserved that, you know, that just that little callback to, hey, I was a part of the Straight Edge Society, and that was a big deal, and it helped make one of your male stars into a huge star. You know, like that, I was very glad of that. Santana Garrett looked like friggin' Wonder Woman in her match and with Piper, and like, oh my God, seeing my timeline fall in love with Piper and discover her has been one of the best things about this week, because she's so great, and there are not that many big girl wrestlers out there really doing it, you know? And Piper is, I mean, her work in Stardom has just been incredible, and by all accounts, she's just a total sweetheart in real life. So seeing her perform so well on this stage and then having this match with Santana, who is just spectacular, was awesome. James, I could talk for like another 20 minutes about this. Stop me, please. Like, it was okay. It was great, and they need more things like it.
Let's start with Viper, or Piper. Piper Niven in this particular tournament, otherwise known as Viper on the British indie scene and in Stardom. And if you don't think that this tournament's going to have an effect outside the business, guess who won the Princesses of Stardom title this week? That was Viper, and and also got a pinfall win over Mio Itani, the current World of Stardom champion in the G5 Star tournament that is going on in Stardom at the moment. She's had a good week. And you can tell that the Mae Young Classic has built her confidence no end as well. Her performances have been fantastic, but she's been talking a lot about body shaming, and she's been talking a lot about the freedom that she has now that she's done this, and that is not something she talked about before. You know, she has got so much more confidence in herself. This has made her look like a star, and now she's gone somewhere else and been a star. You know, she turned her back on Ode Tai, which no one ever does for a start, and joined Io Shirai's the Queen's Court in Stardom this week or 2 weeks ago upon Io Shirai's return. That's something else we probably need to talk about as well. Yeah, and you're right. Just the matches were just fantastic. And I'd be interesting to see who produced the Rachel Evers, Kairi Sane match. I'm guessing it was probably Sarah Stark because...
Rachel Evers?
Yeah.
You mean Tessa?
Tessa. I was thinking Rachel Arrowing, who I'd do the match with. Yeah, anyway. There's a lot of names, but I'd be interesting. I'm guessing it would probably be Sarah Stark who produced the Kairi Sane Tessa Blanchard match just because she did produce some of the other matches with former Stardom wrestlers in. I know that much.
Oh, so, I didn't know that. Yeah. That's interesting.
So as a former Stardom roster member, she does know all of those women quite well and can probably get the best out of them. So, you know, and you're right. I've got to say, like, Abby Leith or Princess Kimberly, as I've known her as a wrestler for a long time now, I have been a massive fan of her since the first time I saw her belly-to-back suplexing JT Dunn around the Beyond Wrestling Arena back when they used to just have matches which were the boys wrestling the boys and the girls wrestling the girls and the girls wrestling the boys with the boys and the girls at ringside as the fan grace, and that was all they had, and they just did that as TV, and they sold the matches to the build-up to where Beyond Wrestling is now. She's a woman who built that company. She went on to be the ace of Chikara. She was Chikara Grand Champion. I've been following her career for 3 or 4 years. I think she's absolutely fantastic, and she gets to wrestle one of my best friends on WWE television, and that was f***ing amazing.
A quick note about her being Chikara Grand Champion. First of all, they said it. JR yes. freaking said it. He said the name of the Chikara Grand Championship, which, like, WWE does not talk about Chikara, so... I was very excited that they gave her credit for that because they did not give her credit for that originally in their bio of her that they did when they first signed her and then announced her for this tournament.
I've also noticed that Candice LeRae has been listed with the men she's wrestled on the independent circuit.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. I don't think you're going to get a breakout of mass intergender wrestling in WWE anytime soon, but it's interesting that they're moving the goalposts a little bit.
I have a suspicion about that, actually.
Go on.
I wonder if she's going to beat up Tommaso Ciampa for turning on her husband.
That could be interesting. That would be definitely
interesting. Because they've had matches before, and they were good.
I think on this particular tournament, they were given a bit more freedom and a bit more leeway. When I listened to Jim Ross's podcast about the production process of the NYC, he talked about how him and Lita and... Lundra Blaze or Medusa Miceli did the sit-down interviews themselves. You know, they didn't get production assistants to do it. They did it themselves, and they let the conversation flow. They weren't tied down to what they could do, so they could pick out the best parts. So I think they were trying to experiment a bit, stretch their legs, and try and get people interested in this tournament that wouldn't normally be interested. People like me, for instance. You know, and just going back to Alpha Female and Jazzy Gabber, and I've had a hell of a week watching this, but the most important thing for me is watching my friend just explode on the internet and how many people were talking about her. And, you know, I followed her career.
Everybody was.
Yeah, I followed her career since 2013. We've become friends. As you know, I'm writing her biography at the moment. I've been doing a lot of the editing this week. So I'm reading all these stories about how she started in the business and, quite frankly, the god-awful life childhood she had. And I'm seeing all of this stuff. And I'm reading all this stuff. And then I'm watching my friend wrestle Abby Leith on, like, the biggest wrestling show for women that has been in years and years and years. And, you know, as well, people like Viper and Tony Storm, who I've been watching on independent shows. At literally every show I've been to in the last 12 months, Tony Storm has been on. And I've watched her grow as a performer, like, in person, you know. And it's like, and to see her go there... You know, she won the Cinderella tournament for Stardom earlier in the year, and this is just as big a moment for her just to have this match. And she won the Progress Women's Tournament as well. She's been one of the most successful women's wrestlers on the independent circuit in Europe and in Japan and in Australia, and she gets to go and prove it on the big stage. You know, there is so much cool stuff, and there's so many people that have been involved outside the WWE making this a success, because if you don't have promotions like Pro Wrestling Eve and even Bellatrix who promote women's wrestling in the UK, and Shine and Shimmer and Rise in the USA who are giving these women these opportunities, and all of the Joshi promotions, this tournament doesn't work. You know, there has to be a groundswell of this good a level of talent for it to actually all fit together. And I've been had an emotional week about it this week because it's been absolutely fantastic.
I'm also going to point out, I think something like 75 or 80% of this roster has wrestled for Shimmer before. And Sarah Del Rey and Sarah Stock both worked for Shimmer pretty extensively. I think Sarah Del Rey is one of the founders. So, like, literally, this tournament wouldn't exist without Shimmer in particular. Like, it's a little staggering to think about, you know? And I have one more thing to say about the Chikar Grand Championship that we were talking about before about Abby Lath, because this isn't something they said during commentary, and they should have. When she was Kimberly and she won that title, she was the first woman ever to win the company title, like the biggest belt that the company she worked for offered, in a company that primarily features men and doesn't exclusively feature women.
It was, and at that particular time, there was no TNA World Heavyweight Champion, there was a Ring of Honor Champion, and there was a WWE Heavyweight Champion, just the one, because that was the days of the Unified Championship. She was the third-ranked heavyweight championship wrestler in the world at that point. As far as people like PWI were concerned, we talked about the PWI 500, she was ranked under their system as the third-best wrestler in North America. You know, that's high praise, because Chikara is a big company. Chikara were doing more on iPay-per-view than TNA were doing on pay-per-view at the particular time that she was champion. So, you know, so more people were watching her than were watching Impact Wrestling in North America on a pay-per-view basis.
She also, I can't say enough lovely things about Kimberly. She also does so much to encourage young women who go to those shows to enjoy wrestling and feel like wrestling is for them. She would always come to the ring in like a little toy tiara, like the kind you buy at like Toys R Us or something, and give a tiara to a little girl in the audience and say, here, keep this safe for me during my match. And that strategy works 100% of the time. It's awesome.
Bribery gets you everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what, though? Anything that says to little girls, wrestling is for you too, is awesome.
Yeah, that's it. That's the thing. You know, we go back to the Triple Mania 25 event, the amount of kids that were in the audience. I don't particularly think they should have been there, because the last match was an awful gore fest that I don't think you probably wanted to watch until you were 35. However, but it was so encouraging to see so many young people going to a wrestling show. And you're right, it is about female participation. And, you know, if you've listened to the squash this week, you've heard Gavin Duenas talk about why he feels that women won't main event in the WWE at the moment. I had a massive row with him on Twitter in a friendly way. And I'm sorry, Gavin, you're still wrong. However, I can see his point, but the point is we need to change the conversation. And I would rather have more women going to wrestling shows and more women being involved in pro wrestling and broadening the audience. And as Gavin quite rightly said, we probably would alienate membership of the current audience. I don't care.
Who cares?
Because it's like, I want to make the audience bigger and not work to this niche. We're trying to make it so it's a casual audience again. And as we said earlier, Triple Mania has this casual audience of men, women, and children. It was an even mix in the crowd. It wasn't just men, like we do see a lot of mainstream events in North America. They managed to do it. With, you know, they had a women's championship match, though it ended awfully badly for the people involved. It was highly ranked on the card and it was treated properly. And Sexy Star, as much as we don't like her, is considered a big star in AAA. And clearly, if she can think she can get away with what she got away with, she is respected within that particular management structure. Whether she should be or not is a different story. But she is, you know, she is a draw for that company. She is considered valuable. So if you can make women considered valuable in Mexico, why can't you make them considered valuable in North America generally, not just in one country? And the CMLL roster is the same. Anyway, sorry, went on a rant there.
That's okay. We all have a lot of feelings about this. It's just been my favorite thing about this week on wrestling Twitter, which I love, is seeing people discover great women's wrestlers that they've never seen before, never heard of. Like, in some cases, there were women in this tournament that no one had seen before, really. Like, I think we all kind of knew about Bianca Belair. Well, I'd never seen her wrestle a match of this length
Yeah.
And her match with Sage Beckett, she was really good. I was really impressed. She has, I think it was Scarlett, my friend Scarlett Harris, who pointed out to me on Twitter that she has like Sasha Banks levels of charisma. I totally agree. She was awesome.
I was going to say I like Rhea Ripley an awful lot. You know, her athletic.
Yeah, that was going to be the next thing I was going to say, is that she was great. Like, I was really impressed. And isn't she only 20 years old?
Yeah, she is. Her athleticism, her poise, her timing. And she, I'm thinking, she's a performance center woman, isn't she? She isn't
Yes.
She isn't an indie wrestler. So, you know, she is completely flat new to this, and she's learning the playbook directly. She hasn't having to relearn the playbook. You know, there are advantages to being a WWE recruit. And Xia Li was very good as well. She has timing and presence yes. down. She hasn't got the skill set, clearly, to keep up with the other women in this particular tournament. But her presence was exceptional. And her,
she's got the fundamentals, man. She can move.
Yeah, so it was really, really good to see these new talents. And it bodes well. Even if WWE don't sign all of these women, they will use them. You know, Toni Storm is going to sign with WWE at one point, surely, at some point. So, you know, because she's just that good. And she could have so many. She could have so many good matches with so many other people. There are other people in this tournament. I would say Viper probably not this year, but she certainly will sign long term because, you know, she can move and she can wrestle and she's big. She has a presence about her. You know, she's kind of Nia Jax-esque without the, you know, how can I put it? She's Nia Jax, but she's a different take on that size of woman. You know,
so she's also, I'm gonna say, you know, it's telling to me that Nia, they put her in very glamorous gear. They always dress her in black. And yeah. Viper's gear or Piper's gear is always very, very colorful. It's very, very fun. It's very stylish. Like, it's cute. And for such a big girl who has such a fearsome presence when she's playing like a vicious heel, which a lot of times is her job, to wear like, you know, bright pink or bright blue or bright green. Like that's, I just, to me, I'm enchanted with that concept. I forget which one of my Twitter followers pointed that out to me, but when I thought about it, I was like, man, that is so cool.
It's interesting as well, because in Fight Club Pro, she's Deputy Viper, a member of the No Fun Police.
I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, that, I mean, we can't say enough about the Mae Young Classic. I think I have to agree with you about Jim Ross and Lita on commentary. I think in one sense, I was happy it was Jim Ross because he lends gravitas. It means they're taking this seriously. Jim Ross is, you know, they've had, WWE and Jim Ross have had their troubles in the past. And it means that usually if they've hired Jim, it means they're trying to say, this is important because Jim's doing it. But that doesn't necessarily mean translate to the fact that Jim's going to do a good job or not. He did great job in certain spots. Like I said, he was actually probably better with those vignettes to introduce the women than he was actually calling the matches themselves. And so, I, you know, it's a bit similar to, like, we've talked as well about the Access TV commentary with Josh Barnett and Jim Ross, which is sometimes brilliant and sometimes not. So it, when you're trying to introduce something fairly complex to a new audience, Jim's kind of your guy and he's done the job well here to an extent, but it's kind of overly simplified.
He's not who I would have picked.
Yeah, we could have done with a bit more storytelling, I guess.
I would have picked Mauro, and I would have picked Alundra.
Yeah, I probably would have gone on with that as well, except it's tying Mauro down, because he doesn't just work for WWE, he works for Rizin, he works for UFC sometimes as well, he works for all sorts of boxing promotions too. It's whether he physically has the time. I think Jim Ross saw him at an airport once and said, are you okay? Because you look pretty tired. So, yeah.
I agree. And, you know, there's a reason he's the best. Jim Ross clearly cares enough that he wants to do a good job. I just don't think this is his genre. I don't think this is his stuff. I don't think he gets as invested in the women as he does in the men. And that is a problem that I can't quite get around when I listen to him talk.
Fair enough. I can understand that. I can see where you're coming from with that. But equally, I think from a casual audience point of view, you have an instant stamp of approval. Hey, Jim Ross is doing this, so it's got to be good, whether
That's
he is
true.
Any good or not. So it's kind of a balance.
That's true.
It's a two-way sword with it. So yes, I understand where you're coming from with it, though.
That's true. They spent some money on him. And, you know, that's... he does have an authoritative voice. So that's good that they understood that was necessary.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and moving on, finally, we come to Europe and Birmingham. Well, more closely, Wolverhampton. And King of Trio, Shikara's premier event, the biggest wrestling tournament in the world. 54 competitors over 3 days, and it starts in about, 4 hours' time now. I won't be there, but I'll be there on Sunday for the final, hopefully. And it's going to be a big deal, because it usually is. Sendai Girls defending their championship. They're back with Miko Satomura, the greatest professional wrestler in the world today, along with Cassandra Miyagi and Dash Chisako, and they're defending their King of Trios championship, which they won against JWP in the final last year. Chelsea, your thoughts on, first of all, Shikara coming to the UK for this massive tournament, and secondly, what are your thoughts on King of Trios generally?
So I've never been to a King of Trios in person, but I really should at some point because it's always awesome. I've watched it on the Chikaratopia, like Chikara's network thing that they have, and King of Trios is always a great show. They always get the best people available on the indies for it. This lineup of teams that they got is incredible. they have, is it British Strong Style? Is that what they call Trent and Pete and Tyler?
Yeah, that's their progress name. So I'm guessing they're coming in as heels this time.
Yeah. To see them participating in a big Chikara event like this is going to be really cool. House 7 Seas is of course like all Chikara mainstays, but that should be fun. Gosh, what else do they have on here? I'm just looking. There's many names.
House World of Sport, which has got a lot of old British World of Sports wrestlers like Johnny Kidd, is in that team as well.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. Yeah. They got Simon Gotch, which is a little random to me, but I saw his face and I was like, hey dude, you're there. Nice to know He's still out there doing it, I guess.
He's been in XWA for the last month, staying at Dan and Emily's house.
Oh, wow.
There you go. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully he's a good guest. and I guess Solo Darling is continuing to do her thing with Travis. And she's, coming a long way. I think Chikara is just really suffering from losing their two top female stars. And They're clearly trying to find a way back to having really good female wrestlers be prominently featured in the company. It's just that the talent pool has been so thoroughly depleted recently.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that they are letting Solo get her sea legs under her and letting her get to a point where she can step up into that role. I think those are big shoes to fill, but she seems like she's very determined and like she's trying really hard because she keeps improving.
Yeah, and that's it. That's kind of the Shikara way. I mean, like Heidi Lovelace, the first time I saw her was 2013 National Pro Wrestling Day when she was working for Pro Wrestling Is Art in their championship match against Mr. Touchdown, I believe, in the main event.
Oh, yeah.
And that was...
I could watch those two wrestle forever.
Yeah, and they were... That was the day that the Shikara was reborn, and they were part of that storyline. Because the BK came to destroy the banana, which was the championship of Pro Wrestling Is Art. Or Pro Wrestling Is Fun, sorry, that was it. No, get it right. The heart of Pro Wrestling Is Heart. That's the company they were working for. There were so many of them. It was confusing. And so they were the championship match, and the BDK came down to destroy it, and then the entire Shikara roster came back together and it was just absolutely brilliant. I'm just like having memories of all the craziness that happened in that particular like half hour. It was just such a brilliantly told story, and that was where Shikara returned. And you're right, they're trying to still plug gaps of their roster being depleted by the WWE, to be honest with you. But equally,
they lost their two biggest female stars who are both killing it right now, and that had to be tough.
It did. And equally as well, Mike Quackenbush has a pretty good relationship now with WWE. He goes to the Performance Center and gives classes every once in a while as well. So, Shikara's got a better relationship with WWE than he ever had done before. So there's some leeway in things that can happen there. Like, for instance, having like people like British Strong Style, who are WWE signed, are at King of Trios. There's an advantage to that. Probably means they lose out on their New Japan connection. because there's no Young Bucks this year. There's no Kenny Omega, which I know people were kind of looking for maybe as a
rerun. We haven't had the Bucks in a few years, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, but there's plenty of fun stuff that's going to locally draw as well for this show. So I think it's going to be interesting, and I'm really intrigued to see what's going to happen by the time I get there on Sunday, because I have to work to pay for this, unfortunately. Sucks, doesn't
it? Stupid wrestling tickets costing money.
And travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. My dad wanted to go to this and was quite irked that I forgot to tell him that it was this weekend.
Sorry. Sorry, James's dad. I wanted to go too, and I'm on the wrong side of the ocean.
Yeah, you were way closer to this last year.
Yeah, and I still couldn't go.
Right then. Well, I think we've talked about every form of wrestling in the world ever. In the last hour, so it was nice to have a bit of a fun blast around. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time, Chelsea.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that, and we'll be back next week probably with the history of Japan. We need to get back to that. We need to plow through 1992, and we're looking maybe at some new Japan stuff. We're not really sure. We plan it as we go. We'll figure something out for next week's show. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. Please do listen to the other show on the WrestleTalk Podcast Network. That's the Squash. Thank you for listening to the WrestleTalk TV Podcast Network, and we appreciate you listening to us. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can follow Chelsea at Chelsea Comics and at Shoulders_Up, where she quite often tweets about wrestling. And take care, and we'll speak to you next week. Bye.